It is so great to welcome back to the KVI Airwaves a great friend of us all, Brian Suits, on Talk Radio 570 KVI, himself, of course, a Purple Heart recipient, veteran of the Iraq War, and many others. Brian, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. I'm in lovely Salton, Washington, walking the dogs.
Well, first of all, before we get into a couple of topics we got to talk about here, everyone wants to know, what's Brian Suits up to these days?
Well, my show, The Dark Secret Place, is still on KFI in Los Angeles, and also on XM Channel 166, America's Talk.
Okay.
So that's, and also, by the way, I'm writing the first of three books. So that I've got a book that, as they say in hip hop, it's going to drop in July, but I think in publishing, they say it's going to be published in July. So
now, is this going to be nonfiction, novel? Tell us.
It's fiction, very, very closely adhered to the truth, because I can deliver information through a novel that I can't in a nonfiction book without mailing it to the Pentagon first. And
okay,
getting
Tom.
Patterns.
Okay, Tom Clancy.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to that. And, of course, we got to promote that when it happens. Brian, I got to ask you, 10 years ago this week, we launched the war of Iraqi liberation, oust Saddam Hussein, and make America and the world a safer place. It costs us 4,500 American lives, over 32,000 wounded, some very badly. You were one of those wounded, of course, and many others carrying invisible scars of that war. Was it worth it?
I don't think it's time yet to tell, and I don't want to sound like I'm Pollyannish or overly optimistic, but I have read in some open source Arab media sources that the real spark to change in the Middle East was seeing Iraqis going off to vote in January of 2005, and their sovereignty being handed back to them in June of 2004, and that caused a ripple throughout the Middle East, which was these strongmen are not here permanently. And unlike a lot of Americans, I didn't go to Iraq waiting to be thanked by anybody there. Germans didn't thank Patton for liberating Germany because they didn't consider themselves liberated. They consider themselves occupied. And I didn't feel any reason. The lessons of history weren't lost on me. My dad was part of the Japan occupation. I didn't go into Iraq wondering why people weren't throwing roses at me. I frankly didn't care. My job there was restore electricity, repair schools, distribute money to rebuild, get Iraqis to, and the message as a fire support officer in an infantry company, one of my jobs was to go out every single day and rebuild the country. And I always sat there with Iraqis and I said, listen, one way or another, I'm gone in a year and a half. I'm here for 16 months. You got to live here forever. If you want to help me rebuild your community, I'm here and I've got virtually unlimited money. If you don't, I'll go down the road to the next village. I'll go down the road till I find a village that wants to work with us, and then we'll rebuild it. And then you'll wonder, where are the Americans? And that approach worked. And the reason that I used that approach was because I learned it in the Balkans in 1999. I learned, as sort of a neutral party, how to sit down with diverse, we're occupying the Balkans for all intents and purposes. And I learned how to sit down with people and say, look, I know it's in your best interest because I come from a place that works.
Okay. So 10 years later, how is Iraq different today?
The bottom line is it is the only functioning Arab democracy. And when a cynic or a PhD at the UW says, well, I wouldn't call 3 or 4 suicide bombs per day a functioning democracy. Really? Well, tell that to Northern Ireland. Tell that to Great Britain. They mm-hmm. underwent 20 years of terrorism with the IRA. That's entirely a functioning democracy. And that's what's remarkable about it is, in spite of 8 or 9 suicide bombs a day or a week, they continue to hold regularly scheduled elections that are observed by the world, and the world agrees that they hold free and fair elections. So I'm not going to go to my deathbed waiting for Iraqis to thank us. Because I don't believe the Germans ever took a deep breath in 1955 and said, whew, so that happened. Well, thanks so much, America, for liberating us.
So you keep hearing that, well, the Christians are being driven out and Iraq is being driven toward the arms of the Iranians.
Well, and this is, I think, part of the naivete of Americans and Republican as well as Democratic presidents is that democracy is a panacea for everything. Democracy versus strongman in the Middle East ultimately may be a double-edged sword, because if you allow a majority of ignorant people who are dominated by fundamentalist clerics to go vote, then you're going to get a fundamentalist government.
Well,
and that's what you're going to get.
One word, Hamas.
Yeah, and Libya's turning that way. You know, Egypt elected a fundamentalist majority government.
I'm so with you. Egypt, the Brotherhood. I'm so with you, Brian. Democracy is elections plus pluralism, respect for human rights, the fundamentals of civil society, et cetera, et cetera. Those things are missing. It's turning into more like one vote, one time.
Well, yeah, and the only constitution in the Arab Middle East that guarantees seats for minorities, minority sects of Islam, minority religions is the Iraqi constitution.
The Iraqi constitution, that's right. That's right. So what would Iraq and the region, do you think, Brian, have been like if we hadn't made that move 10 years ago?
I think Saddam would still be giving scholarships to suicide bombers in the West Bank, $10,000 or $20,000 for the families of suicide bombers. He would still be oppressing his people and killing them at a remarkable rate. And if we had sponsored a guerrilla army, you know, to begin fighting him, that might have worked. You know, would have taken forever. And he's displayed an ability to do his own. Saddam knew counterinsurgency. He had a rule book we did not have. His rule book was kill everybody in the village. And
yeah, it's a very simple rule book. It didn't weigh a lot in your pack.
And I think he would have remained. And this is the one geopolitical chess piece we don't have anymore, but he would have remained a very potent counterbalance to the Iranians. But ultimately, the world's a better place without him.
So it sounds like you're saying, with qualifications, Brian Suits, it sounds like you're saying, yeah, it was worth it. It could have been done a whole lot better, but it was worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. My timing would have been different. It would have been, my calendar would have been to the right about a year or something like that. I would have made a different case in the UN, not that he has weapons of mass destruction that he's about to use, but that if he continues in power, then the United Nations is meaningless.
Right. Because
he had done the four things that you have to do to lose sovereignty. And I'm sorry, Michael Moore, but he was not a sovereign country. He invaded his neighbors twice, used weapons of mass destruction on his own people, ignored UN resolutions left and right, and then sponsored terrorism externally. And he wasn't even in charge of one-third of his own country. You know, the RAF and the U.S. Air
right.
Force were
the no-fly zone.
Yeah.
That's right.
And the Kurds were developing, you know, they have a head start on the rest of Iraq.
Their own country. Mm-hmm.
Extraordinary, yeah. But I have little problems, you know, here and there. But ultimately, I knew in 1991, after the Gulf War, when I came back from Saudi Arabia, it was really obvious that this guy can't stay there. He just thinks he won a war. He told us people he just beat us. So I think it was inevitable. But I would have done it a little more artfully, I think, than George Bush did it.
Well, I have you here, Brian. I've got to ask you the terrible story out this morning. We lost 7 Marines in a training accident. Hawthorne, Nevada, apparently a 60-millimeter mortar went off when it wasn't supposed to. You've been there, right?
Yeah. I was in the Nevada Guard for 5 years in 2-2-1 armor, as it's called, and we went to Hawthorne 2 or 3 times a year to draw our mortars and our TOW missiles.
What do you think went wrong here?
I think that these guys were the ammo detail to bring the ammo back to Pickle Meadows, this Marine base up in the Sierra Mountains, or out to Fallon Naval Air Station. They were getting the ammo in crates, and 60-millimeter mortar ammo is packed individually in a tube, and inside the tube, the mortar has the propellant already attached to it. And when you're going to use it, you take off what you don't need. You don't put on what you need. And so they, if one of them goes off somehow, or there's a flaw in the round, if they're all packed tightly together. If one goes off, the one next to it's going off. And in fact, the 10 around it are going off. And if those 10 go off, 100 go off. So a 60 millimeter mortar, I was wounded by an 81, a bigger mortar. And if a single 60 doesn't kill seven guys, so it had to be a sympathetic detonation,
a chain reaction
amongst other ammo.
All right. They said, and I think you've explained it very well here, Brian. They said even though the accounts are conflicting, the shell exploded in a tube as Marines were preparing to fire it. Another account said the shell exploded as Marines were picking it up to load it.
Yeah, you don't shoot at Hawthorne. Hawthorne is one of the largest ammo depots in the West. They don't allow live fire. They don't allow live fire exercises at Hawthorne. They were moving packed ammo to a firing position, which most likely would be Fallon Naval Air Station or Pickle Meadows up in the Sierras. And it's a long drive. It's a four-hour drive down to Hawthorne, and then you sit there all day long, and some federal GS-14 sits there and looks up and down at your clipboard and the place is huge, 230 square miles, huge. And then he drives you way out to where the mortars are, and you back your truck up to it and start unloading it. And yeah, if people get lazy or the stuff wasn't packed right at the factory, it can go up, and you just shouldn't drop anything that can explode.
If one of those 60 mortar shells went off, say in a what's something everyone can relate to, say in a McDonald's. If a 60 millimeter shell went off, what would the damage be?
It would probably wound 10 people and maybe kill one or two. A 60, you have to be in very close proximity to it to be killed by it. And the 60's main effect is suppression of the enemy.
Okay. So you're saying there's a whole lot more than just one shell here.
Yeah, the explosion of the round would not kill seven guys unless they were all chanting to it and holding it or something. Okay. It had to be a sympathetic detonation of the other ammo that
the
they were.
The other ordnance, okay.
Yeah.
Brian Suits, my guest. Brian, I got to sneak in one more quick question here for you, and that is the ABC poll showing 58% of Americans believe that the war in Iraq was not worth it. Get this, 56%. Now say the same thing about the war in Afghanistan.
I almost feel, you see, there's an accomplishment you can point to in Iraq, and there is not one. There's not a commensurate accomplishment in Afghanistan. And now the guy who's the head of Afghanistan even speculated that we were conspiring with the Taliban 2 weeks ago. And so the more he opens his hummus hole, the more Americans say, what the hell are we? Who are we? Who's this idiot we're backing? And Why are people going there?
Hamid Karzai.
Yeah, when he said, I suspect the U.S. is, conspiring with the Taliban. And I think there's a direct relationship to his gums, his gum flapping and American public opinion. But also, for a lot of people who forgot why we went there, where there's been no reinforcement. There's been no, hey, we killed a top al-Qaeda leader. For the past 8 years or 9 years, it's been, hey, we got the top Taliban guy. And if someone stops and thinks about it, because it's been the back burner war in American society, because we don't have national service anymore, so it's other people's kids that are going. But if someone thinks about it, then they say, wait a minute, I thought we went there for al-Qaeda, not the Taliban. And after 10 years, I gotta be brutally honest, I really don't care if some other country dresses their women up in cloth from head to toe. I'm over it.
Brian Suits, it's so great hearing your voice again here on KVI, and I'll let you get back to walking the dogs there in Sultan. Please give my best to Rachel.
I will. Thank you very much, John, anytime.
It's great hearing you again, Brian. That's Brian Suits, Lieutenant Brian Suits, Purple Heart recipient here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Great having him here.